Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So ever since we started this podcast, really our mission has been to bring awareness to all of our listeners about what the movements that you do are doing inside your body, different interventions that professionals might be doing, even foods or different supplements that you might be using. What exactly is that doing inside of our body? Something we don't often think of is the mattress that we sleep on, the sheets that we use, the pillow that we lay our head on every night. Our skin is the biggest organ of our body, and it is just absorbing any toxins that might be in those materials. That's why Jen and I use Brentwood Homes. We know that Brentwood Homes makes their mattresses, their sheets, their pillows with only the best and highest quality ingredients. Most of it is organic, so you know that no toxins are being put into those different products and getting onto your skin. One of my absolute favorite things they make is their yoga meditation bundle. It gives you a bunch of different bolsters and pillows that you can use for different types of mobility or meditative practices. Go down to the link in the show notes. Check out any of their products. Jen and I would endorse or use any of them. They even have dog beds that Kai, I'm sure, would love. So check out the link in the show notes and let's head into the episode.
We are talking nutrition today with Jason Phillips, who's been active in this fitness industry for decades. He went from anorexic to where he is now, which if you check him out on social media, go type in Jason Phillips is nutrition right now and just check him out. He was a former cover model, a professional athlete, and sought after fitness and nutrition coach. And now he's currently the CEO and founder of Nutritional Coaching Institute, or NCI. He runs a really successful mentorship program for fitness and nutrition coaches. He's written several publications, including Men's Health and his own books, Macros Explained, Macros Applied, Nutrition Coaching Secrets. And we're just so honored to be able to have him on the podcast today because we're really going to dive into what it takes to actually understand nutrition within your own life, your body, and your own lifestyle. Jason, thank you so much for being here. The way that you speak, your conviction, the way that you're helping people, like I am just captivated whenever I see a video of yours. Like you are captivating in your knowledge, in your expertise, in how you're helping people. Like I'm grateful that you're here. So thank you for being here.
Well, I'm super grateful to be here. I followed you guys for quite some time, and I actually met you in New York one time. Zero chance you'll remember that, but I love yourself, and just to hear those words, it's amazing just to hear that. So I hope that the listeners today get some value. I know anybody that's taken the time to listen to this, I know time is your most valuable resource, and I appreciate you just taking a few minutes out of your day and spending it with me and us.
Okay, wait. How long ago was that we met?
I bought a lot of somebody's books.
Ah, yeah.
So that was in New York. But yeah, that was it. I don't know how long ago that was. Four years ago? 5 years ago?
Oh, amazing.
It's been a while.
Well, yeah. I'm glad to chat with you again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to finally reconnect.
No, it's so funny when we have those stories about, you know, someone who's, you know, followed Jen and appreciated her content, and then we click into your content and think the same thing. And it's like the stuff that you put out is great. And I think the biggest thing that jumps out at me is the story that comes along with it. And I love digging into what makes people so passionate about what they teach, because it usually comes from something that they learned in their own journey. So can you just talk a little bit to why you're so passionate about delivering this nutrition information and education to everybody?
No doubt, man. I think that, you know, anytime that I get the opportunity to speak about nutrition, food, body transformation, performance enhancement, longevity increase, I am actually speaking to myself, and I'm speaking to the 18-year-old version of myself. And so, you know, I don't have the traditional entry into health and fitness that I think a lot of people have. I actually started as an anorexic, and it was so bad that honestly, man, I would sit on the floor of my bedroom in my parents' house each night, and I would actually contemplate ending my life. It was such a vicious cycle of I mean, dude, I'd eat dinner. I would go to my bedroom. I would do a bunch of crunches because I'm like, I got to burn this dinner off. And I would like look in the mirror and be like, do I still have abs? And I did. And it was just this, it consumed me. And I was like, this is not worth it. If this is the rest of my life, you know, just entering adulthood, it was horrible. It was such a bad time. And, you know, fortunately for me, I overcame that. And I'll never forget when I realized I had overcome something so bad, because I guess when you're anorexic, you don't really realize that you quote unquote have an eating disorder. But, you know, when I realized what I had overcome, when I realized the freedom it had created in my life, I knew it was a vehicle that I wanted to use to pay it forward, to help other people. And I knew there were a lot of other people suffering in silence. And so, you know, I did so, and I tried to do so for a long time. And fortunately for me, I kind of figured it out and built quite a large coaching company. And, you know, every time I get the opportunity, whether it's one person, 1,000 people or 100,000 people, I just want them to know that, you know, wherever food is negatively affecting you, wherever you haven't figured it out, wherever it lives in your life, whatever change you're looking to build around it, number one, you're not alone. Number two, there is a way. And number three, we're going to find that way. And I know in doing so, I know the ridiculously powerful change that comes with it. And I know what it's like to get to the other side. And I just want to help as many people as possible do that.
That's absolutely incredible. I mean, the fact that you, I mean, thank you for sharing your story, first of all, as well.
Of course, of course.
Because that's a very vulnerable place to be. And especially, I feel like you don't hear a lot of men speaking into stories like that, whether it's body image or eating disorders. We've been hearing it a lot more from women, but I think it's very powerful to acknowledge that, you know, the journey from all humans and anyone.
For sure.
What were you like medically diagnosed? Did someone point it out to you? Like, how did you come to knowing that this is a disorder and needs help?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I was actually 2 days away from a clinical intervention, as I would come to find out. Obviously, I didn't know at the time, and from my pediatrician and my family. And so my pediatrician, who was actually, I don't want to say he's the catalyst because that makes him sound horrible. But long story short, I had been asked to do some modeling, and I was a golfer at 18. And so my diet consisted of like chicken fingers, pizza, mac and cheese, and pretty much every unhealthy food you can eat, because that's what golfers eat. At least back then they did. And, you know, so then it was like, I was asking everyone, how do I get abs? How do I get abs? And he said, you know, it's all nutrition. Just read the magazines. And so I did. And basically what I was reading was, don't eat this, don't eat that, don't eat this, don't eat that. And before I knew it, I wasn't eating. I was doing, you know, 2 hours of cardio a day. I was weight training every day. I was restricting myself to about 800 calories a day. And I was losing hormone. I was losing zest for life, and I was really in a bad place. And so he had actually asked me to go work out with him, and I did. And he just saw how I handled the whole thing, like the ridiculous amount of work I wanted to do in the gym, like the way I almost berated myself, and how I wouldn't eat afterwards. And that was kind of the beginning of what almost became an intervention.
Wow. And so from being in that place, like, what did the process of healing start to look like for you? And how did you start to develop new patterns around food intake and nourishing your body and while being somebody who likes to move and exercise?
Yeah. So I first want to acknowledge that I'm not sure you ever truly overcome an eating disorder. I'm now 37 years old, so we're 19 years removed. And I'm not sure that I'm 100% healed. To say that I don't still have body image issues at times would be mistaken. I certainly channel them better. I certainly understand everything a lot better relative to my education. But I do think it's really important that anybody that has gone through this that thinks like, oh my gosh, I still haven't overcome it. Like, I don't think that's abnormal. And I also think that, you know, just clinically, anorexia is anorexia nervosa. It's a nervous system disorder. And so I don't think that you rewire your nervous system to not have those thoughts. I just think that you learn to process them better and channel them better and handle them a little bit more in line with the ultimate goal of your life. And so but with that acknowledgement, you know, my journey out of it is probably much different than most. I didn't seek any specific treatment. Like I said, I actually lacked awareness. But to give you some context, I was actually working in a gym. I was opening the gym from 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. And it was the only job I could hold because at like 2 p.m. in the afternoon, I had no energy. I had no testosterone, obviously. And so literally when I say if I needed to sleep, like it wasn't like I wanted to take a nap at two. It's like if you didn't put a pillow under me, it didn't matter. I would sleep on the concrete. Like I had no energy. So I had this job opening the gym and I loved it, except one of the trainers, she saw what I was doing to myself and she knew it wasn't healthy. And there was a bodybuilder that would walk in every day and he was dieting for a show. And I would be like, that's what I want to look like. Like, you know, he had muscle. He was super lean because he was like 4 weeks out. And I'm like, that would be awesome. And she said to me, she said, you know, I do his training, I do his nutrition, and I, you know, I would do that for you. And mm-hmm. so the next day she said, I need you to go eat 4,000 calories. That's where we start. And mind you, this is 2002. There was no MyFitnessPal. There was no calorie counting websites. Like this was, I went to Barnes and Noble. I got a calorie counting guide and I wrote out 4,000 calorie meal plans. And for whatever reason, with blind faith, I implemented it every single day for three straight weeks.
Wow.
And I'll never forget. I opened the gym one morning and I went into the mirror and in the locker room before anybody had come in. And I said, oh my gosh, like, I've been eating 4,000 calories every day. This whole food thing, it's not bad. I'm not fat. And for whatever reason, in that moment, I had trust that food was not the enemy. But there's a lot of layers to that because I think that we look at food as a collective, and I don't think that anybody with an eating disorder does. For me, I'm sure you can imagine, I didn't make 4,000 calorie meal plans of pizza and mac and cheese and chicken fingers and all the things I ate as a golfer. I ate it of, you know, like eggs and egg whites and oatmeal and fruit and, you know, healthy nuts and, you know, high quality meats and things that you would expect a quote unquote healthy person to eat. And so that's what I consumed 4,000 calories from. But, you know, as I overcame it and I went away to college, and I went to Florida State, I quickly realized that the life of a 21 year old male is different when you're away from a controlled setting than it is in a controlled setting, meaning my friends wanted to go out and drink at night. My friends wanted to go to Chipotle. My friends wanted to have pizza. And that was a whole nother layer of trust that I had to learn. I'll never forget. I went and, you know, I got drunk at night and I remember waking up the next morning and running to the bathroom to make sure that I hadn't gotten fat. Cause I swore in my head I was going to wake up fat. And I did. I wasn't fat, obviously. And I was like, okay, I can drink alcohol. And I did the same thing with like Chipotle and pizza and like pretty much everything. I had to learn to trust virtually every food that I ever would go on to consume. And I don't know the clinical side of how they go about things. But I, from everybody I've spoken to, male or female, that has gone through it, firsthand trust seems to really be the only thing that cements it.
Yeah. And I think that's everything. I mean, that's how you're going to start to get pulled through, is by trusting the people that are providing something for you to be able to follow. And for you, that you were still going after a body composition goal. So even though you had a disorder, what was so interesting is that you trusted someone who said, okay, I can get you to what you want to look like, but this is what you have to do. And you did it. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was. At the time, it didn't feel like anything crazy. But, you know, as I know more about behavior change and you know, the nervous system and just mindset and nutrition in general, I'm super proud of it, to be totally honest. I've been fortunate enough to achieve a lot of great things in the fitness industry, but I think starting there is probably my greatest achievement. Second to, you know, earlier you said you don't hear a lot of guys talk about it. You know, I think I was fortunate for me, I was one of the earliest to discuss it openly. I actually, bodybuilding.com ran a story on me. I actually received a supplement sponsorship back in the day when that was a really cool thing. Long before social media was a cool thing, like we're talking like MySpace days. you know, it was something that I've always been super open about. And, you know, as I think about it, if you're a faith-based person, great. If not, then, you know, I don't know if this will hit you, but I really believe that, you know, it was put in my life because I would not only pass the test, I would not come out stronger, but I would share it and I would make the most of it. And that's really how I've always tried to honor it. I've always tried to honor the journey versus look at it as a negative time in my life. And I think honoring the journey of overcoming it, I have a tattoo that says overcome down my right side, and honoring that journey of overcoming is something that I'll always pay forward. And that's really my mission on this earth. You know, anybody that knows about my companies knows our mission is super clear. We want to change 1 billion lives in this world.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And I think, you know, I kind of say all the time that people who do what they do the best generally did it on themselves or in their own journey first. And again, I think where you learn this lesson is so powerful too, because, you know, it came from more or less an aesthetic goal. And I think a lot of people kind of demonize aesthetic goals these days. And, you know, we're living in a time where we are trying to teach people to always be happy with themselves and with their bodies. But Can you speak to how you feel? Like, you talk about fat loss and pretty openly a lot, talk about, you know, helping people achieve goals where they want to look a certain way. How do you maybe help try and teach lessons within that aesthetic goal that people might have?
You know, I try to make sure that people have a really clear understanding of their goals in general. So I have a principle that I call the triangle of awareness. And I think that most people don't really understand their goals. And maybe better stated, most people don't understand what their goals are not. And so, you know, we were talking quickly off air before we started this, and I was kind of telling you what my goals are. And so if I went to a trainer and I said, well, I want to look better. I also kind of have mobility goals. Well, do I want to look better and, you know, do like a lot of uniplanar movement, like, you know, just vertical or horizontal and lack potentially create imbalances in my body? Or do I want to move better so that I can play golf better? Because those are two very different goals, and going about them may be very different things. And so as a nutrition coach, one of the things that we hear all the time is like, well, I want to look good and I want to feel better. Now, there is some crossover for sure, because the initial loss of body fat for somebody that is overweight is likely going to is probably going to create some well-being. But as to like how Western culture defines quote unquote looking good is typically low levels of body fat, right? For a male, sub 10%, for a female, sub 20%. And for us to start glorifying that as the quote unquote look good, there's sacrifices that have to be made. And, you know, for a male to walk around with, let's call it 7% body fat and visible abdominals all the time, you're probably not going to be functioning optimally, which means at times your sleep might be broken, your sex drive might come down, your ability to be in a good mood or focus all the time might be compromised. And I think that people don't acknowledge those things as potentially part of the fat loss journey. So I think that when I work with people that want to lose fat, even if they want to compete on a stage or anything, I try not to be the person that dictates what their goals are or are not, but I do have to be the mirror. And mm-hmm. So when you tell me what your goals are, we're going to draw a simple triangle. I'm going to label the top of that triangle performance, the bottom left of it aesthetics, and the bottom right longevity. And I'm going to ask you to draw where in there your goals are. And I'm going to have you explain to me what that represents. If our descriptions match up, awesome, we'll get started. If they don't, we're going to keep working until we have a visual representation of what your goals are that align, so that we both know moving forward what we can expect and what we shouldn't be expecting. And I think that so many fitness journeys start misaligned. And I think that's why they actually don't end up in success.
I think that's so huge. And you bring in the lifestyle portion that a lot of people often neglect, right? And that's even what I see as a physical therapist. If someone is coming in with pain, I have pain right here, fix right here. But it doesn't work that way. It comes into what is happening in the entire experience and your environment as a whole. It's in your stress, your sleep, your food, your, you know, there's so much more than just this one thing. But when it comes to food and nutrition, that's what a lot of people believe, or when it comes to body composition, I want to look a certain way. It's what food do I eat right now, right? And it's just focused on this singular thing rather than the full picture of things. So how does someone start to take into account, you know, drawing this triangle and putting all these pieces based on their life together?
Yeah, I think that, you know, so much of every journey has to start with what you're willing to do forever. And that seems so cliche. The word sustainable gets thrown around so much, and I think it's well-intentioned, but I think that just like anything in human life, if you hear something enough, you just start to tune it out. And so our industry has gone around and said, you know, we need to create sustainable fat loss. Well, you know, an overweight person isn't necessarily thinking about keeping weight off. They're thinking about losing the weight. And so I think that, you know, this is where, and really, I think this was one of my greater contributions to the industry was, I don't think science has changed in the last 100 years, right? Physiology is physiology. The human body works a certain way. Obviously, our discoveries in science have vastly improved, but they've always been there, right? Like our human physiology has not evolved. And so, but the way in which we implement has evolved. And I think that the coaching industry has really added an element of connection. And that's really what I saw that was broken. You know, when I was anorexic, the knowledge of how to eat more was out there. I could have read psychology texts. I could have read, you know, food texts. Any nutritionist could have given me a meal plan. But the truth is, even if I read the psychology books, I read the metabolism books, or a nutritionist gave me a meal plan, I wasn't going to follow it because I didn't have connection to an individual. And mm-hmm. so when I look back on my journey, what saved me wasn't that somebody gave me a 4,000 calorie meal plan. It's that an individual reached out and was willing to help, was there when it got hard, was there when it was easy, and was there to continue guiding me. And so where I simply start is listening. I think that I need to know, like, why are we on this journey? Why are we where we are today? What brought us here? Was it one diet? Was it 10 diets? Was it, have you tried one diet? Have you tried 10 diets? What do you like to do? What do you not like to do? Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but if I put you on, if you like carbs and I put you on the keto diet, sure, we might see success temporarily, but is that success? Probably right. not. I think that we have to start glorifying, we have to stop glorifying success over 8 to 10 weeks, and we have to start glorifying success over 8 to 10 years. But again, that's not sexy, right? Yeah. So the business side of me says, if a coach ever came to me, I was like, well, I'm going to sell a program that takes 8 years to get to. The coach side of me would congratulate you, and the business side of me would tell you you're nuts. So I really think that's it. We have such a crowded space. We have such a noisy space. We're trying to create results for people that they need, but we're trying to speak to results that they want. I think confusion is at an all-time high.
No, I think, you're singing to the choir right now, singing with the choir, I guess, with Jen and I, just because that's the kind of stuff that we preach all the time when it comes to pain and pain with movement. It's like, how can we approach this so you aren't just getting out of pain today, but we're starting to develop your internal, messaging and signaling so you understand why you're having this pain and you build up a successful system around it to support yourself for life and so that you can do that daily maintenance on yourself every day. And I think that in this diet culture, and you address it a lot on your page, and I love how it kind of like coy and satirical you can be sometimes in your posts, about what a successful diet might look like, or, six packs don't qualify you to give health information. That's like a blanket statement that I think everyone should pay attention to. Just because you quote unquote look, good or you look hot, like, that doesn't mean you should be a nutrition coach. So, when someone comes in with, a goal for, fat loss, or, I want to take off some weight, could you talk through what kind of a successful and quote sustainable lifelong path might look like for somebody, and just some core tenets that you need to see in someone's diet and nutrition changes to achieve fat loss?
For sure. So I think we could all agree there's always going to be a million ways to skin a cat.
For sure.
I think that, everybody, the one question everybody loves to ask me is, what's the best diet? And I'm like, gosh, that's such a loaded question. But so I'll kind of zoom out a little bit, and then we can zoom back in if you really want to have that discussion. But I think what precedes that is, are you even ready to quote unquote diet? And that word in general, I think, is so mistaken, because you and I went and, we went out to Times Square and we surveyed 1,000 people and we said, oh, have you dieted? Everybody's going to say yes. And the connotation of diet in their head is going to be, they have actively pursued some goal and likely restricted to do so. Mm-hmm. But the way I look at the dietary world is, why does it have to be so binary? Why does diet equal restricted, and why does not diet equal no restrictions? Because I view dieting as having four completely different phases that most people have never even considered to observe. Dieting as we know it today is the active pursuit of goals. And so we could call that fat loss for most people, but for some people that's, muscle gain or other goals. But for most people, that's fat loss. And so the very first question I would ask somebody if they came to me for a quote unquote diet is, are you even ready to diet? And now we have to ask you, well, is your life set up to diet? But more importantly, is your body prepared to create the adaptation that you're trying to facilitate? And we hear these crazy buzzwords, and I don't want to get all sciencey, it's not very fun, but we hear these crazy buzzwords of reverse dieting and metabolic adaptation and adaptive thermogenesis. And to make that really simple, what most people have to understand is, every time you diet, you're navigating away from your body's what I call true center, or your homeostatic balance. And every time you navigate away and you don't intentionally return, you're just getting further and further and further away. And your body doesn't really like to create change when it's not at true center. So most of the people listening to this have probably tried 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 diets. And they're wondering, well, how come the first one or two worked, but now on diet 8 or 10, it's not working? Well, it's because you navigated further from true center. So perhaps the quote unquote diet we need to go on is the one that returns you to true center, or what I would call a recovery phase. Mm-hmm. 90% of people that are seeking out a diet should probably start with just recreating the ability to facilitate adaptation or to lose fat or do whatever it is they desire. Then they can go into actively losing their weight or facilitating their goals. They should then recover, and then they should look at how can we optimize our lifestyle around this. Now, I'm a believer everybody should look the way they want to look, feel the way they want to feel at all times of the year. And I think if it's planned with periods of going for those things and then recovering from those things, any body can truly have exactly what they want. But if you're just continuing to pursue, it's like, you know, it's like the three of us just being like, you know what, I'm just going to work 24/7 for about 6 years in a row. And, you know, our first month might have fantastic output, but how do you think like our 12th month of the sixth year is going to look? It's probably going to be pretty horrible.
Yeah.
And that's because at some point our physiology is burning out too.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you talk about the setup in order to get into that phase. What does that kind of look like? How do you start mm-hmm. to set yourself up? Do you have like principles, sleep, anything?
Yeah. So the first thing is obviously for most people, it's as simple as restoring caloric maintenance. Most people inherently live in a deficit that is too large. And so it's restoring estimated caloric maintenance. And we know caloric maintenance is a range. And so, but it's increasing your calories. The second thing is decreasing stress. And stress is a really commonly misunderstood word, I think. Virtually everything we do is stressful. And really all physical change comes down to stress and adaptation anyway. You really have to understand what is your natural like waking stress profile. For me, I'm an entrepreneur. I own multiple companies. And so I wake up and on a stress index of 0 to 10, I would say I wake up with like an 8 to 10 every day.
Wow.
And so if I'm an 8 to 10, or an 8 out of 10, I probably shouldn't be doing high volume CrossFit. I probably should be trying to sleep more. I probably shouldn't be eating super high inflammatory foods. And I probably shouldn't undertake the pursuit of goals very aggressively, because all of those things are stressors.
Yeah.
But if I was a sedentary, now I do have a 3-year-old daughter and she's next to me. I apologize because I've heard her in the background. but if I was just a sedentary stay at home dad, which would be awesome, I would have a much lower stress index, and maybe I could do more intense workouts and sleep a little less and eat some different things. So I think that the first thing is recreating caloric maintenance. And then I think it's reducing stressors across the board. And until you have your stressors in balance, meaning you can actually adapt to the amount of stress you're inputting, you have no business undertaking the active pursuit of a goal. You should still be trying to find that set point, that, you know, true center, so to speak. And once you're there and you've recreated that, and then that's when we start looking at what's called biofeedback. And this is the physiological responses of your body. I have a saying in our school that we say the physical follows the physiological. Meaning when I work with clients, I don't care if the scale drops the first day or the first week. I want to know what's happening internally. Are you hungry? Are you sleeping better? Do you have more energy? Is your mood stable? Is your sex drive high? Like all of those things. If all of those things are on point, there is zero chance that your physical self does not begin moving in the right direction. But if those things aren't responding, then we really can't expect the physical to follow. So the whole, you know, creation process that you asked about is getting to caloric maintenance, restoring biofeedback to normal, and we do that through mitigation of stress.
I have a couple questions off of that. One of them has to do, so I like this restoration phase that you talked about. You mentioned a little bit about, you know, restoring somebody's body's ability to even get into that fat burning state. I want to talk a little bit into what that means, you know, accessing those different areas of the metabolism, however you can best break that down. And just even talking into like when we returning someone to caloric maintenance, like I feel like we see a lot of people who, you know, might have different weight loss goals, but, you know, to what you just said, they might not even be eating enough calories. How does that make sense? If they are already not eating enough calories, you know, shouldn't they be losing the weight? Or how does somebody find themselves in that cycle?
Yeah, I think this is probably one of the most misunderstood things in nutrition. We hear it said all the time, you have to eat more to lose weight. that kind of skips a step, to be totally honest. You don't just eat more food and immediately start losing weight. You eat more food and restore that physiological response so that you can lose weight. And the industry doesn't necessarily tell you that. So, but it's kind of in line with what we're talking about. So, you know, if we were to look at this on a continuum, right? If we were to draw a straight line in front of us horizontally, and we marked a spot in the center, and every diet took us like 2 tick marks to the left. Well, 5 diets takes us 10 tick marks to the left. And all of a sudden, let's call that the magical 1200 calories that seems to be prescribed by quote unquote experts at times. And so here we have, you know, Mrs. Jones, who's consuming 1200 calories, and she's like, well, I'm not losing weight, but for whatever reason, I'm going to keep doing this. And over time, she keeps eating 1200 calories. But you guys know, you're, you know, in the medical side of things, we weren't put on this earth to walk around with 5% body fat, shredded six packs, and looking the way that, you know, magazines portray quote unquote health to be. We were put on this earth to survive, thrive, and procreate. Mm-hmm. And so the longer you stay at that 1200 calories, your body actually begins adapting to that as its new true center. And so while 1200 calories inherently to your, you know, stature, and I say that with air quotes because, you know, there's physical formulas out there, you know, basal metabolic or BMR formulas, TDEE, like total daily energy expenditure formulas and equations that are normal. 1200 calories is no longer considered a deficit to your body. Your body's created adaptations. Well, what does that mean? It means that it's actually slowed down its fat burning response to 1200 calories, because if it gives up body fat, that means that it will no longer have insulation for its organs. And if it doesn't have insulation for its organs, at some point you're going to die. Mm-hmm. So it actually slows all of its metabolic processes. Now you hear that talked about publicly as like hormonal decline or, you know, thyroid issues, both of which are very real. But that's really what starts to happen. Your body throws up natural defense mechanisms. In fact, you know, Lane Norton wrote a great book on fat loss, and he actually talks about the body being the most sophisticated defense system against losing fat. And it's very true. For any individual that has ever undertaken a calorie deficit, your body immediately, like in that day, starts throwing up defense mechanisms. Some people faster than others. And your body is guarding against ultimately losing fat because that's its survival mechanism. So when you're there and 1200 calories is the new normal, and let's say you consume 1500 calories, well, while that should have been a deficit, it's actually a new perceived surplus. And so when we're eating too many calories, we start to gain weight. And this is where, Dom, where you're starting to get the people that are like, well, I'm only eating 1500 calories, I'm gaining weight. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, all because of what you've done previous to this. And so this goes back to the restoration phase where we're saying, okay, if your body's adapted to 1200 as the new norm, how do we restore the original norm, which is, let's call it 2000. Once we do that, now we've got a set point that we can move forward from. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And based on someone's activity, stress, everything, like it's going to play a role. And that's why these 1200 calorie diets, it's just, it could be really scary, especially when we're talking from a hormonal aspect. What are some of the body signals that someone should be kind of listening for and starting to become aware of if their body is telling them something's not right, it gets to change?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always do this. Whenever I teach coaches how to be a nutrition coach, I always ask them a question. I was like, well, what should happen when you diet? Like logically, we take, you know, a normal 30 something female who's never dieted before, and we take away 500 calories of food. What would we think would happen? Well, she's probably going to get hungry, right? I mean, that's kind of normal. Like you take away 500 calories of my food, I'm going to get hungry. Well, at some point, if we keep that removed, you're probably going to have a little less energy, which then translates to perhaps you have a little less affinity for what we would call neat. The best way I can describe that is I always like, you know, if you've been dieting for a very long time and you're in a crowded parking lot, you're a little more willing to wait to find a parking spot close. But if last night you went to Cheesecake Factory and you decided like, you know, YOLO, I'm going to have 3 slices of cheesecake, you're probably willing to park like across the street from the mall and still walk your way in, which is your body's natural defense mechanisms, right? You had less calories. Your body's like, I got to preserve my energy. You had more calories. Your body's like, I need to burn this energy off somehow. And so, you know, the really what ends up happening, or the way that we know these things are happening, is when things just simply aren't normal. If you're eating at a deficit and you're not hungry, which I'm sure a lot of people have said or at least heard, that's not normal. We need to recreate that hunger response. If you're not sleeping like a normal human being, that's not okay. We need to look at that. If you're super tired all the time and you're actually consuming food, that's the problem. We should probably look at that. And so, you know, really, I don't think it should be this big rocket science thing. And so, you know, there's so much, and it's all well-intentioned, but everyone's like, we got to look at the gut, and we got to look at, you know, blood work, and we got to look at this and that. And I am a big believer in the functional side of our industry, but I'm also a big believer in starting with simplicity and not scaring people and not using fear-mongering tactics to scare people into thinking that they are completely inadequate relative to this journey. Sometimes it's simply a function of realizing you've done this for entirely too long. You need to do what would be normal and recreate what would be normal, and then kind of move forward from there.
Now, how does movement play a role in what you're consuming in your food? Like, you mm-hmm. know, I say someone is having a little bit of an eating disorder and feeling like, well, I can't take in too many calories. I need to be in a calorie deficit. That's all I see everywhere. But yet I need to work out and I need to do all these things. Like, how does working out affect how we're eating?
Sure. So working out in and of itself is just a stressor. And so whenever we're trying to change ourselves physically, whether we're trying to lose body fat or whether we're trying to gain muscle mass, we are intentionally imposing stressors with the hopes that our body will create the desired adaptation. So most people, when they go lift, they're either like, you know, if they're burning body fat, most people are, you know, doing cardio, unfortunately, but they should be doing strength training and some cardio. Mm-hmm. And they're hoping that that will produce fat metabolism. You know, for those that are trying to gain muscle, they're going into the gym, they're lifting, and they're trying to break down that tissue, eat in a small surplus so that the tissue regrows bigger. And so when we understand that, we also understand there's an intensity curve that comes with training. I had a background in CrossFit, and I actually discovered almost everything I know from the hormonal system because of how badly I messed myself up in CrossFit. And this is not a knock on CrossFit. I think CrossFit's great to some degree. But I also believe that there was a lot of really bad knowledge at that time. And so I came into CrossFit in 2012, and I come from the physique side of things. And so I was like, well, this is great. I can do this really high intensity exercise, which will help me burn fat. And I know how to diet to stay really lean. Like, this is awesome. What I hadn't really put together yet was I wasn't just training 5 days a week. I was training 5 days a week with triple the intensity. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting the same amount of food to produce the same response, which it didn't. And so over time, I couldn't recover. I'll never forget, I was training for a huge CrossFit competition. And like literally 2 weeks before, I loved a squat. I went in the gym. I put 135 pounds on the squat bar to warm up. I looked at it and I walked out of the gym. that's how much motivation I had lost because of simply not fueling myself. And so training is not just a caloric expenditure. It is also a function of intensity. The harder you're going, the higher intensity. So the Orange Theories, the F45s, the boot camps, those are much higher intensity than the traditional weight training protocols that we saw just 10 years ago. And I used to make jokes, you know, if you went into the Gold's Gym 10 years ago and you said like an AMRAP or an EMOM, they would look at you and be like, get the hell out of here, you CrossFitter, right? But you go in today and you see all of these people and they're like running around the gym and they're like treating it like it's like the circus. And they're doing all sorts of crazy things because that's the new thing in Western culture, which is totally fine. There's nothing wrong with it if and only if we understand that it's a massive increase in intensity, and that with intensity increase means we also have to recover from said intensity increase. So it's not just about calorie burn. It really is about that intensity factor. And when you understand that, then you can move on from that. That being said, I will say in the 10,000 plus clients I've worked with, I've had to pull several thousand off of more intensity training modalities simply because they've undereaten for entirely too long. Mm-hmm. And there's no way I could feed them enough to recover from the intensity of those. Meaning I actually pulled people out of Orange Theory, F45 or CrossFit, and they began losing fat at a much faster rate, which I know sounds crazy, but can't argue with the results.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, that's not to ever mean that they won't be able to go back to that at some point. Again, once they find that new set point and prepare and create a foundation in their body to be able to handle that while fueling it correctly. Again, it's just about doing the process right. And I have kind of a question about this, because I know that sometimes when people might initially get in touch with a nutrition or strength coach who's going to do their nutrition plan as well, you know, it can become very intimidating of, oh, here's your basal metabolic rate, and then you have this activity multiplier and this and that and this. And I know you kind of talked into it a little bit just now, but is there an easy way for somebody to know, like, okay, based on how much activity I'm doing, like, this is how much extra I might, you know, want to add into my diet based on what I'm usually eating, or I'm going to add in this amount of activity?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the simplest way is to, I love what you said there in the terms of, like, you know, talking about BMR and, you know, intensity factors and all of those things. But I think that the simplest way is, number one, create awareness. Most people, when they're like talking to a nutrition coach or when they're thinking about making change, I ask them, like, where are you currently? What do you currently consume? Most people have no idea. And the average nutrition coach is probably going to ask you for an intake. And that's very alarming for most people, in the sense that they have no idea what they were intaking. And half of them, you know, they try to make manipulations to look good. But it's like, if you don't know where you are, how do you know where you're going to go? You know, try going and, you know, try to go into your car's GPS, not telling it where you're currently sitting and just putting in a location. It has no idea how to get there. So I think the very first thing virtually anybody should do before hiring coaches, figure out, where am I at? What do I currently consume? And then I think a really simple calculation, assuming — this is a very gross assumption, but I'm going to keep things as simple as possible. Assuming all things normal, if you take body weight times 15, that should give you theoretical maintenance, right? Body weight in pounds times 15. That's a reasonable estimation for maintenance. And then look at, where are you at relative to that? If you're consuming less to that, you should be losing weight. Are you? If you're consuming more than that, you should be gaining weight. Are you? And if the answers are no, well, then we probably have some things to fix before we can aggressively pursue our goals. If you are, chances are now is a good time to dial things in a little bit more, and you really can push harder towards your goals. But that's the fastest way, I think, for most people to be able to do it. We don't need to overcomplicate it. We certainly don't need to factor in 100 variables. And gosh, if you're listening to this and you have no desire to ever be a nutrition coach, no need to learn all of the formulas either, because I teach this for a living and I still can't stand them.
Well, and what you do is you teach people how to work with the individual, which I think is ultimately, you know, being able to have someone guide you, being able to have someone, like you said in the very beginning, that is what helped your journey, is by having the trust in someone who has got your back through the ups and downs, through the hardships, and really going to help guide the journey. I think that's everything. Now, I do want to ask, and this might be too big of a question and a conversation for the end of a podcast, but, you know, does eating certain foods, when you're thinking about these calories of what you're putting in and how many, does certain foods, so if you're getting more of like a fast food diet versus a whole food diet, does that play a role in your calorie, in how many calories you should be eating? And you're still resistance training, you're still doing all the other stuff, you're trying to get your sleep. Yeah. Like, what then, will the type of food you're putting in matter?
Like, I feel like I hear some people say the fast food calorie isn't equal to the whole food calorie or something like that. And I feel like that's always a debate that people have online.
This is such a good question, and this is a deep rabbit hole, and I'm going to try to make it as simple as possible.
So just wrap it up in like 2 minutes for us.
Yeah, I'll keep it as easy as possible. So here's the thing, and all the things that you say that you hear, they're all right, and they're all wrong, and nobody's telling the whole truth. And this is, again, going back to my principle of the triangle of awareness. So if you came to me and you said, Jason, can I get ripped to shreds eating cereal and Pop-Tarts and candy and fast food, what do you think my answer would be?
Yeah.
100% you can. It's been proven time and time again. But notice that what you asked me was, can I get ripped to shreds? Not, can I get ripped to shreds, feel good, and have really high quality biomarkers for my health?
Yeah.
That's not the question you asked me. You simply asked me, can I get ripped to shreds? Now, if you come to me and you say, Jason, can I improve my health by eliminating foods that I may be intolerant to? Can I reduce my inflammation by eliminating certain foods? And will I feel better if I do those things? What do you think my answer would be?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you feel better, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a six pack. And so even though the covers of every magazine says six pack equals health, I'm here to tell you it does not. And so what we have to remember is the pursuit of aesthetics, the pursuit of performance, and the pursuit of longevity all require different things. And so, you know, the three pinnacles of this is, do we really think that Mr. Olympia has the best performance in the gym? Like, imagine asking him to run a mile. That would be hilarious, right? 300-pound bodybuilder ripped to shreds running a mile. Probably not going to end well. Probably a heart attack, right? Do we really think that he's going to be in the 100-year-old club? Probably not, right? Now, conversely, when Tom Brady is playing in the Super Bowl, do you think that he looks in the mirror and checks his abs before he goes on the field?
Dear God,
no, he's
probably
watching,
not.
He's watching right? film.
Right. Do we think that he's like, when he's in the middle of season, thinking about how long he's going to live? Probably not. Right. He's got one goal, which is to win the Super Bowl. Now, like, I watched the Today Show and they had like little Smucker's jar things where people turn around, they're like 100 years old. Do you think that those people at 100 years old or that are trying to live longer or feel better, or do you think that they are trying to win the Mr. Olympia or win the Super Bowl?
Nah.
No. So when we understand that and we understand all of these different diets and all of the things that quote unquote work and don't work, the real reality is it always lacks context. Mm-hmm. And that's the single biggest mistake in nutrition is we lack context. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier. You don't know what your goals are. And more importantly, you don't know what your goals are not. Mm. If somebody comes to me and they say, I want to win Mr. Olympia, I'm going to be like, awesome. Just to let you know, you're probably going to feel horrible. You're probably going to suck in the gym and you might be sacrificing your health. Are you okay with that? And if they say yes, fantastic. You hired me for a purpose. Let's go do it. When I worked with the highest level CrossFitters, same thing. Just want to let you know. I don't really care what you look like in the middle of season. In fact, like one of my athletes, Carlene Matthews, who we had a fantastic career together. When she first came to me, I said to her, hey, Carlene, I am going to take your abs from you during the season and I'll give them back to you after the season. And she couldn't believe it, except that when we gained a little bit of body fat for the season, she had her best performances ever.
Wow.
And so again, it's, are you acting in accordance with the specific goal? The answer is no, it's not going to work. The answer is yes, it works. So is the question come with context? That's really what's ultimately going to determine success.
Mm-hmm. This has been so enlightening in so many ways. And I hope that really people are soaking this in and understanding in a deeper level. What exactly is your goal?
Yeah.
What is it that you really want to achieve?
And what is, I think that's such a cool place to kind of end because it summates everything we've talked about.
Yeah.
What's your goal and what's the context from which you've previously been drawing information from, or no matter what information gets thrown in your face, what context is missing that the person who delivered that is not, you know, is omitting from you. And so cool. I mean, just in this little bit of time, you've convinced me that you're an incredible nutrition coach yourself, and you would be fantastic at coaching other coaches into doing this, which I know is primarily what you do now. Where can people find out more about learning from you if they want to?
Yeah. First of all, I appreciate the kind words. Second of all, Instagram is probably the easiest place to connect with me. It's at Jason Phillips is Nutrition. And yeah, like you said, primary goal now is to certify coaches and put them out there and help us on our billion person mission. You know, we're really clear. If we can certify 200,000 coaches in my career and they each help 5,000 people, we will hit a billion people. And you know, that's more than 10% of the world. I think that's pretty cool if we can change that number of lives.
That would be really incredible. So I, you know, we're going to have this linked up down below and DM him, reach out to him. You know, you're just filled with knowledge and we really appreciate you taking your time from your vulnerable story, creating what you have and helping so many people.
Of course. And anybody that does want to reach out, like I told you guys off air, you know, anybody that is interested in getting into the field, just mention Jen's podcast and I'm happy to give you half off any of our courses or any of our services as well.
Oh, dang.
Something that, you know, we're super happy to extend and you know, I believe in doing this with the right people. Obviously, you guys are listening to this podcast because Jen is a phenomenal resource and Dom's a phenomenal resource. And just to pay it forward to you guys and your community, I'm happy to honor that for everybody.
So wow. Generous. Yeah,
that's amazing. Thanks for that. Nice fat discount for anybody yeah. who wants to reach out to Jason and yeah, see if they can learn more about how to help other people. Jason, thanks for, you know, getting connected. I'll have to, thanks Brian. I know that he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I think you got to interview this guy. And I'm like, all right, we'll give it a go. And so super glad that we got connected and stay in touch, man.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. I hope I made it worth your time. And I hope everybody got something out of this and, you know, can move forward and make the change that they want in their life. Because I definitely believe that, you know, it's I have a very firm belief success is an inevitability. It just requires you simply not to quit. So no matter where you are in your journey, whether you're somebody that, you know, needs to kind of push the reset button and find that true center, or whether you're someone actively pursuing your goals, you just need to find a new way to get there. The only thing that will ever prevent you from getting to where you're trying to go is quitting. Otherwise, success is an absolute existence in somewhere in your life. So go get it.
Just love how that interview ended, and so grateful that we got to bring Jason Phillips on again. Go check him out on Instagram. And they are actually throwing a coaching conference coming up in April that we will also have links to down in the show notes if you're interested in that. There's a chance Jen and I might be making an appearance if we can manage to make it to attend that, because we know there's just going to be so much incredible information. If you like that interview, or if you have any future ideas for interviews, DM us, please reach out to us, email us, leave a message in comments. If you really love the podcast, remember to subscribe, rate, and review. That just helps this podcast get out to more and more people. And we can't wait to keep bringing you Physical Therapy Pearls and more interviews on the Optimal Body Podcast.